everybody, and welcome to another episode of Two Bearded Losers. Happy New Year. I am Eric from Hey Internet, Eric here, and as always, I am with everybody's favorite gremlin, my buddy Frenzy. How you doing, friends?
Fantastic.
Yeah, hope everyone had a good Christmas. I mentioned it's New Year's, and growing up, the Sci-Fi Channel always had a 24-hour marathon of The Twilight Zone, so I threw the idea out to Frenzy, and we said, fuck it, why not? Tonight, we're talking 1983's Twilight Zone, the movie. If you've lived under a rock, you know, if you're not one of the people that regularly listens to us, you know what the fuck the Twilight Zone is. And the movie was literally taking three stories from the TV show, and they threw in a fourth one for good measure that was literally a killer. It's our first anthology, I believe. Isn't it, Frenzy?
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
Yeah.
The basic gist of it is, like I said, four different stories, and we're going to, you know, we'll get the elephant out of the room right now. We'll talk about segment number one with Vic Morrow, directed by John Landis. Vic Morrow plays a racist bastard, and he hates blacks, Jews, Asians. And, of course, he leaves a bar, and he ends up being in the body of a Jewish person during World War II, a black person in the South, and a Vietnamese soldier in the Vietnam War. And I thought this was – I always loved this sequence as a kid. But then when my dad told me, like, the behind-the-scenes stuff, I'm like, it's already a dark segment, in my opinion. But now it's really, really, really sad and depressing along with the darkness. I thought this was very creative. This is the one that is the original story. It was not an episode of the show, to my knowledge. And you follow Vic Morrow, and one thing which I think is good in this version is there's no redemption. You know what I mean? Because of what happened, you know, they didn't get to that part of the story, but there's no redemption for Vic Morrow's character. And I think, you know, kind of like Tales from the Crypt and stuff like that, there's always like that cliffhanger ending, that morality tale, you know, banger punch to the gut. And I think this is a well-deserved one. Because in the end, after, you know, he's chased at by the Nazis, he's almost strung up by the rednecks. And I thought it was kind of cool that one of them was played by John Larroquette, if you noticed. And then he was almost killed by, since it was John Landis, he was almost killed by Niedermeyer's troops from Animal House. They mentioned that they shot Lieutenant Niedermeyer. He goes back to Nazi Germany, and he gets the Star of David put on him, thrown in the train. And of course, he sees outside. He sees his friends. He's yelling at them, and they don't hear him. And it's one of those, I don't know, would you call it a downer ending, because he's going to die, but he's a real piece of shit. And maybe it's a happy ending. Those are the type of endings that I kind of love every now and then. And I thought that was perfect. And, you know, even though there's another sequence because of, you know, what happened with John Landis, which we'll get into, I kind of like that it did end there, regardless of why. And what did you think about that? Just like the whole segment in general, Frenzy.
Whew. It's going to be hard for me to talk about this because I've always hated this movie since I was a kid. And
really?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where I just got lucky. I just happened to be right that it turned out to be trash.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be hard for me to say positive things about this because I just rewatched it for this.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole point of this is to look for the positive things.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't go without saying that this John Landis piece that opens the movie for whatever reason,
right,
which is ludicrous to me. I think people are like stumbling into the theater. People show up late. They're eating their popcorn. They're with their girlfriends and stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's a little inappropriate unless it's like pulled off really well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not. But my bigger point is this thing spoiled the whole goddamn movie. Like, for real.
Really?
And, like, I'm very good at separating the art from the artist. I sincerely don't care that he murdered people because mm-hmm. they've been dead 40 years. I don't mm-hmm. know them.
Right.
There's a separation, right?
Mm-hmm.
It sucks, obviously, and he's a piece of shit. But he still makes pretty amazing movies. This one is not one of those. And I don't think... They were double fucked with this. It's not that what happened caused this movie to be bad. It's mm-hmm. partly that. But the real problem is that it just sucks. And, like, it's poorly... all of it is poorly conceived. this is like, I'm not going to say it's a slap in the face to Twilight Zone.
Right.
But anyone who's ever seen the Twilight Zone, it's all about the subtlety of it, mm-hmm. right? It's almost like little plays, right?
Yeah.
So if you're going to do a movie version, mm-hmm. right, it's got to be really done really well.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the first half of my rant, when I said that this event spoiled the whole thing, it's kind of true because everyone else involved didn't want to have anything to do with this.
Right.
Like,
George Miller,
he didn't even finish his own movie. Joe Dante had to finish editing it. Steven Spielberg was disgusted. Yep. And like, it makes total sense. That compounded with the fact that what they're working on was shit to begin with, mm-hmm. in my opinion, like the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I'm coming from, right? It's hard to, I'm going to try to say something positive about this John Landis thing at the beginning. I mean, I think it's fucking embarrassing. For real. Really? Like, especially they have this platform. There's millions of people that love the Twilight Zone that are going to go to the theaters to see this. And this is what you do. This is your brilliant play of racism. And like, I don't get it. I think Vic Morrow is great.
Yeah.
I think he's a great character actor.
Mm-hmm.
I think what he's... The sequences and how the shit unfolds is kind of retarded.
Okay.
And the positive thing I could say about it,
is,
man, it's so stupid. I mean, this is like what fifth graders think racism is. I don't know, man.
Well, you know, we won't get.
Vic Morrow is great, and he did not deserve to go out that way in such a. And the such fact a that, pitiful movie.
The fact that Landis got away with it, like OJ did it and got away with it.
Yeah.
You guys can do your research, but basically what there was one more sequence where he went back to Vietnam and he was saving two children during a village bombing. And according to Landis, you know, air quotes, an explosion went off at the wrong time, blinded the helicopter pilot. And you can see the footage. It's on YouTube. It landed on all three of them. You know, two were crushed, one was decapitated, something like that. And the positive, I guess I'll say is like, if that didn't happen, we might've had a really shitty ending. I kind of liked the morality tale because it reminded me or like the Donner ending of what happened to his character, because it reminded me of kind of like Tales from the Crypt, you know, the bad guy always gets his comeuppance type of thing and there's no saving.
Yeah, I agree. But at the same, I know I do agree with that, but let's just think of like, let's focus on the irony of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not only does he get away with it, but they left this in the movie.
Yeah.
Like,
well, and the funny thing is,
this obviously should, this whole sequence should have been cut. Right. If I was in charge of this, like, you know, they should have let me make this movie.
Yeah.
I would have just made a 90-minute version of the George Miller story because it's the only one worth a shit in this movie.
Yeah, for but the most part.
But the most controversial thing is not that he killed people, right?
So he got away with it.
Not that he got away with it either.
Really? Okay.
The most controversial part is that they left this garbage in the movie. I don't understand. It's such a slap in the face to, like I said, Twilight Zone fans, Vic Morrow and his family, and the little Chinese kids that got murdered. Like, why is this in the film? Like, right. For real. I don't understand. Like, yeah. I was just watching it again. Like, it was kind of funny. There wasn't even, like, a tribute or anything in the credits. No,
there was no in memorial or anything.
Which I don't know what's actually better. I just think deep down, this all should have been scrapped. Like, for real.
The whole movie or just a segment?
I would have scrapped the whole fucking thing. Yeah. I think the whole thing's absolutely embarrassing.
I told you I was reading I found this, the novelization for like $5 on eBay.
Love it.
And I did finish reading it today, and it's not very good. Written by the guy who wrote Psycho, Robert Bloch. But you know how in these adaptations, I'll show it on screen, they always have pictures mm-hmm. from the movie? It's funny how literally there's only like there's only two pages of the Vic Morrow story, and then there's like a dozen of concerning everything else. But
well, what's John different? Do they do every story? Like all four of them? Yes,
they're different sequences. It goes Vic Morrow, then it goes Gremlin, then Joe Dante, and then it ends with Kick the Can, which is kind of a really boring way to end.
Yeah.
And the only real differences in this is Vic Morrow's character is more racist because you get to hear read his thoughts So he doesn't just hate blacks and Jewish people. You get to, like, why he has to lock his door, because when he grew up, they used to just steal, like, chickens and watermelons from your farm, but now they'll steal your car. Just, you know, racist bullshit like that. And before I get to the next segment, Jason Goes to Hell reference. Did you notice the connection between Jason Goes to Hell?
Yeah.
Okay, I figured you would.
Well, it's pretty obvious.
Stephen Williams is the guy that basically tells him to fuck off in the bar.
Yeah, I wish he would have beat his ass.
Yeah. Next segment is my daughter's favorite, but then again, she's 10 years old, is Kick the Can. And I liked it more as an adult. Scatman Crothers shows up at a retirement home, takes a bunch of old people out. They play Kick the Can, turn into children. Then they realize, I'd rather be old people. I thought it was more sweet. This time I enjoyed Scatman a little bit more. He was the only character I really liked, though. You know, when I was younger, I liked the Jewish couple, but I think that's because, you know, they sounded funny to me with their thick, over-the-top accent. To me, I only really liked Scatman in this one. And you could tell it was pure Spielberg because of the whimsiness, the magical stuff and all that stuff. But there isn't really too much to it, which is a problem. Like, it definitely sticks out like a fucking, you know, sore thumb, however you want to say it, in these four stories.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Especially for Spielberg. And even with the tragedy that happened, and he said some interviewer, he's talking about how he wasn't in the right mind to make, because he had to film his part after the tragedy, right?
Right.
So it's like, what do you do? But I think it's the good thing about it. Again, whew, this one's tough. Like, yeah, Scatman Crothers is cool, but he's just a magical Negro. That's in this for another
trope. It's okay. We lost viewers for our hottest chick video for being sexist pig. So
maybe magical Negro to me it's racist, but whatever. Like, maybe I'm racist for saying it's racist and, like, completely ridiculous. That's not how.
It is a trope, though.
Yeah, but it's not like you have to outdo the whole point of this. The Twilight Zone movie is you need to one up the original stories. Like, this, the original Kick the Can's fantastic, and he just didn't do it. This is a hokey-ass magical Negro bullshit.
Yeah.
I think, like, people that hate Steven Spielberg, just in general, there are these people.
Right.
They kind of associate the qualities of this segment with, like, all of his movies.
Yeah.
Wrongfully. I think it's completely misplaced, but in this one, they're absolutely right. Yeah. And he's just vomiting up this hokey nostalgia crap. And just watch Cocoon. Like, for real. Why would anyone watch this?
Right.
And why is it in this movie?
Yeah.
What's the positive to take out of the Kick the Can, though?
Scatman Crothers. That's it.
Yeah.
And it's not cool. Memorable. But the thing is, they also picked, in my opinion, an episode from the show that wasn't very good either. I didn't really like this episode.
I think it's pretty good. No, I like it. I like the change of pace, too. It's not, it's not like sci-fi in or it's not Aliens, or the twist isn't like, you know, M. Night Shyamalan. It's very, it's actually kind of like sweet and sad. You know what I mean? I love the Twilight Zone episodes where it's just people in a room, like a play. You know what I mean? They're subtle. It's subtle. Not in this. This is like he's beating over the dick with this horrible music and all the hammy ass performances.
That's true. And speaking of not subtle, is the next one, the Joe Dante one. And everyone knows who's watched the show and knows me personally, Joe Dante is my favorite director, and he took the Kid with the Magical Powers episode. And it's really like a nightmare version of Looney Tunes to me, which is, you know, he's a huge Looney Tunes fan. Everyone knows it. But, don't get me wrong, Kevin McCarthy is great. I mean, he's always great. They got the Dick Miller cameos, you know, the usual stuff. But I think he took a lot of his love for Looney Tunes and he cranked it up so far past 11 that it is just way too much. You know what I mean? I liked some of the little stuff. The sister with no mouth who's crippled. That's creepy. A lot of the set designs and the use of colors are creepy. But when he ends up having like this really like discount version of the Tasmanian Devil come out of the television and all it is like, wagging its tongue and like blowing air at people after we just saw this really fucking cool like killer rabbit coming out of a hat. That is awesome. This thing is like it's like the kick the can version of, you know, everything that was good visually in this. And I mean, I loved the lady who played Helen. A lot of the characters were good. Even Nancy Cartwright was neat. And it was cool that she got sucked into TV land being, you know, Bart Simpson. I hate to say it, and you know, I was kind of disappointed with the way he went with this because it, like you just said, you know, slap you over the face and all that stuff because it was too much. It was overkill or whatever other, you know, word to pull out of the thesaurus, you know what I mean, to describe it. And as a Joe Dante fan, this is the first time I've seen in like maybe 10 years, I think this is like probably one of his weakest works of all time. I hate to say that. And that includes like the original Piranha. You know what I mean? Because, you know, Piranha, you know what you're getting and you have that stuff spaced out. He has all this shit happening to you in like maybe 20 minutes and it's too much to take in.
Yeah, I think that's everyone involved except for George Miller.
Right.
Everyone else involved is their it's all their worst work or weakest work. I think with this one, it logically makes sense. I see where he was coming from, Dante, in doing this, in that the little kid in the modern version of this, right, in the 80s, would be a child who watched Looney Tunes and violent cartoons and things on TV. So his world is like, compared to the 60s one, right? Which I don't know if that takes place in the 60s or it's the 50s.
I don't know.
But that version, the stuff that he in his imagination and things, it fits perfectly with that time period, right? But things got so it makes sense that he would do this off the wall because that's a modern kid, especially now. If they redid this again, it would be 10 times crazier than Joe Dante.
Yeah, because you know the kid's watching different Looney Tunes, he's watching Heckle and Jekyll, you know, that type of stuff. So it makes sense. But I think because it's so much crammed in 20 to 25 minutes,
Yes.
and again, I'm seen as, you know, a 41-year-old man instead of like a 10-year-old who loves cartoons and shit like that. It's just too much. Even though, like I said, some of the performances are great. Kevin McCarthy, he's always great. Always great.
Well, it just this is how I'll just keep repeating the same point over and over again, though. It's like if you haven't ever seen The Twilight Zone, then maybe then you'll love this whole movie. But if especially if you've seen the original episode, it's so scary. It's so minimalist. It's just, again, eight people in a room during a party, and it's fucking it's very unnerving. It's disturbing so many levels, right? And it's like logically, I understood where he was trying to go with it, but again, all of these great episodes that it's based on are very subtle, in every regard. And so it's like none of this could have actually worked, I don't think.
I know.
But the positive thing about the Joe Dante, I'd say the positive thing about Kick the Can was that no one died making it. No one was murdered. I'm sure some of those old people died.
A happy ending, like in the story.
but I can't what the Joe Dante I hate it.
Nothing.
I can't think of any like
At least you're trying, man.
I like how he did his. I love his like beautiful matte. He did the same thing in Gremlins. It's like it's a wide shot into a matte painting, like
Yes, when they're
walking off
driving
into the
away.
sunset. I like that with the flowers and stuff. Yeah, some of the performances, but the problem is it's not scary. Like
Yeah,
on any
it's more
level,
goofy.
it's not scary. It's not very interesting. It's way too long, especially in this thing, because we're getting to the Gremlin one with John Lithgow. Like that one's way too short. They should have cut some time off of these pieces of shit. That's why I was saying like it needed to be its own movie. But Joe Dante, no, I got nothing. You got any, you like some of it, right?
Well, I like the sets. You know, I like the look of the rabbit. I like the attempt at the scary stuff. You know what I mean? That rabbit is amazing. Again, some of the
Yeah,
performances are
but
good,
that's
but
not what's scary about the story though. That's what my point. Like, no one remembers the scary thing from that episode. The boy is what's who's
The
scary.
knowing, and I did think his performance was very good anyway. So,
No.
but we will end on a good note, in my opinion. this is my favorite, and I hate to say that as a Joe Dante fan, this is my favorite segment. George Miller from the Mad Max movies, director of that, took the William Shatner episode, replaced Shatner at Fort Lithgow, upped the ante with the look of the gremlin and the viciousness of it, and we got Terror at 20,000 feet. And I think this one is a home run compared to the other three, which I know it doesn't sound like we're saying much, but I really like Lithgow here. I love who doesn't like fucking John Lithgow. I like how he can go from such a manic, crazy, terrified person to totally insane by the end of it. You know what I mean? Willing to, and you know, that's what Shatner kind of did a little bit in his version, but Lithgow upped the ante here. He is willing to take out everybody in this plane to prove he's right and to take out this beast. What I liked about the Shatner version, though, I'll give it credit, is like you keep saying with the TV show, it's more low key. Shatner doesn't disturb anybody in the plane except for his wife and maybe the stewardess once or twice. You know what I mean? He steals a gun. There's no chaos until the very end of the segment when he opens up the window. And that's what I think is good, because Shatner's kind of a parody now. You know what I mean? You know, with the voice and the acting, he's really good in this. But then again, so is Lithgow. So it's hard for me to compare them because I love the actors' performances in this. And I don't know if you ever saw Third Rock from the Sun. They kind of met in an episode, and they both said they saw somebody on the wing of the plane.
That no, I never saw that one.
Yeah, because Shatner's like their boss, right? And they greet him from the airport, and they say, hey, Lithgow says, hey, how was your flight? He's like, I was okay, but I swore I saw someone on the wing of the plane. And Lithgow's like, the same thing happened to me. You know what I mean? So that was kind of fun. But I really like Lithgow here because, like I said, he's so insane by the end of this. And granted, it was, 1963 or whatever. You know, the thing looked like a melted teddy bear in the Shatner version. The gremlin in this looks fantastic, frightening, scary. It's more malicious instead of curious in the Twilight Zone episode. And I like the end of it, how the gremlin, you know, after it bites off the nozzle, it's kind of neat in this, in the book. In the book, Lithgow gets a bunch of shots. He shoots it once in the belly, and then he starts firing more, and then the gremlin's literally picking the bullets out, you know, catching the bullets, and then he bites the gun. But the look, and then like that whole, you know, when he grabs his face, and then he does that finger wag, like, no one's going to fucking believe you. That's fun. That's malicious. That's creepy. That's scary. And then he just flies away. And that shot that Miller does of it just swooping around into the clouds is awesome. And this is the first time I ever noticed that he sneaks into Mad Max eye bug, you know, bulging. When Lithgow opens up the window and it's plastered right there, you got to watch. But Lithgow's eyes bulge out just like the guy's eyes in the Mad Max, you know, right before he
hits the vehicle. I never noticed that the shit's so chaotic at that point.
I know. And I prefer the less chaos of the TV show, but I do absolutely love this segment. And I do like, because we didn't talk about the bookends with Dan Aykroyd as the monster killing Albert Brooks, and he ends up being the paramedic driver. I thought that was fun. And you're shaking your head.
Horrible. What a waste of Dan Aykroyd and Albert Brooks. It's fucking driving a car for 10 minutes. What a waste. Yeah, well, you want to see something scary? Like, I guess this was before that, but it just makes me think of the Willies. I'd just rather watch the Willies, for real. I've
never seen that.
Oh, my God, it's fantastic.
All I know is it's got donkey lips and he some monster in the closet type of thing. Lips from, like, Salute Your Shorts.
It's more fucked up than that. The donkey lip, it's an anthology, but the donkey lips one's really fucked up.
Okay.
I can't tell you. Oh, it's great. It's a very underrated classic. But no, I wanted to say a couple things about this before we wrap it up.
Yep.
With the terror of Nightmare at 20,000 feet or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's kind of seeing it again now, which I've always loved this one. It's like the only thing I like in this movie. The original was directed by Richard Donner.
Yes, yes.
People don't give him enough credit just in general. I know he died and people pretended to give a shit, but this is very similar to The Thing for me. The Howard Hawks original and then the John Carpenter remake. It's very similar in that the original, I almost love the original as much as the remake, but I still gravitate, I'll watch the remake more, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I really love the Richard Donner original version of this, but it's just, there's no denying how awesome the creature design is in this version with John Lithgow. Now, at the same time, like, what I love about the original version, though, is that it's not, like, this is the talking point you hear from Shining haters, is that Jack Nicholson, he was already crazy to begin with, right? Like, that. This is, it's exactly the same thing. John Lithgow in this version is batshit crazy. It opens with him being crazy. Like, I think there's a missed opportunity for both of these, and it has something to do with the fact that they didn't have enough time, which I don't understand. When you make the movie version of this, they should have gave him as much time as he wanted, right? I think the whole thing's super rushed. I just wish it would have been twice as long, because then he didn't have to start off crazy, and we could have built up, like, you know, he could have slowly unraveled. That's just so much more.
They do that in the book. He's very crazy in the book.
That's obviously what should have happened. So it's this huge missed opportunity, because John Lithgow has, you get a little bit of it, because he goes from being batshit crazy to calm for a second. But the one thing, okay, because we could talk about this all night, how great this episode is. The one thing both of them get wrong is, and just a side note, the original creature design for the TV show, when that was, I mean, this is not made up. Like, this is based on, people have, since, like, World War One, World War Two, have thought that they saw gremlins on wings, right? It's from them losing their minds and being, it doesn't matter. I think the original, the guy in the bear suit, whatever, the Shining thing, I think that's based on what the most accounts of what the gremlin looked like, right? It wasn't just some cheap thing.
I just remember what Bugs Bunny fought in Looney Tunes.
But all that, sorry to be ranting, I think the thing they both fucked up on, even the George Miller one, was going too close with it. Because I just watched it again. It's like, if he would have just kept a distance, when it gets in his face, it's when I kind of check out for real. Oh, when it's not really scary anymore. Because the stuff on the wing, okay, the George Miller version, is some of the best shit I've ever seen. It's not only, it's just so well done that he keeps it in the shadows. Like, I almost can't believe how good it is. And then to have it immediately in his face and holding all that stuff.
But he's still kept in the shadows except for that one shot before they go to the runway.
Yeah, it's still, it's just too much for me. I really wish that this would have been longer and we would have got more, keep him in the shadows. Because the one thing, when he's sitting on that engine and he's ripping it apart and he takes the thing, he throws it in the engine. Am I the only one that thinks of Lieutenant Dan from Forrest Gump? Because it explodes and he's screaming like,
Oh, he yelled at guys.
Every time I watch it, I just watched it again, I'm thinking Forrest Gump. It's Lieutenant Dan sitting on the goddamn engine breaking it. Because that's what he looks like. His long hair's blowing and he's drunk.
Jesus. Well, I guess we will end on a good note. With that, Frenzy, you ready for the score, big guy?
Yeah, ready.
All right. Twilight Zone, the movie, 1983. Fucking John Landis killed a guy. It gets a score of 46. Proceed with caution. I obviously liked it more than Frenzy did.
It's a fair score.
A lot more than Frenzy did. There is some good in there, like Andy Dufresne digging through that pipe of bullshit to get out to the end. You got to dig through some of the stuff, in my opinion, to find good. And Frenzy probably drowned in the shit, in my opinion.
No. Hey, this is the fun factor. It's earned a 46.
He didn't drown. He was able to get out at the end, but it was a struggle.
Yeah.
We'll say that. With that, thank you everybody for watching, listening. Rate us, review us, all that crap. See you in the next one. I just hit 30. If it's not in the background, or if my daughter ever wants to watch it again, you know what I mean?